Hey everyone, this is Brian from the Tennis IQ Podcast. Josh and I hope that you are enjoying the content and discussions that we put out week after week. If you'd like to support the podcast and help us to continue to produce quality episodes, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Currently, we have three tiers of support: the fan level at $3 per month, the supporter level at $7 per month, and the champion level at $20 per month. Benefits of joining the Tennis IQ podcast community include episode transcripts, participation in book club discussions, and access to monthly masterclasses with me and Josh. For more on these benefits of support, head on over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership. Thank you so much. And now, on to the show. Welcome to the Tennis IQ Podcast. I'm Brian Lomax.
And I'm Josh Berger. And for today's episode, we are going to be talking more about routines, which I know we've talked about some in some previous episodes. And we'll talk about a couple different aspects of routines. We'll talk about, first of all, why. Why to use a routine, right? What are some of the benefits, both mentally and physiologically? We will probably outline a little bit more about what you can do between points and what some of those steps can look like, and also some of the things that can get in the way of using a routine, get in the way of really developing a solid routine. Because I think it's an important topic for a number of reasons. I mean, I think, you know, when we think about some of the main mental skills that players ought to be learning and developing, and I think a lot of the, you know, if we think about some of the main skills that we work on with people, Brian, routines are definitely, to me, I think pretty high up on that list. I think you can see a lot when we try to gauge a player's, gauge where a player is mentally. I think a routine is a more visible aspect of whether they're trying to really engage mentally or not, right? Certain things like self-talk are maybe more internal. Breathing, we might be able to see if we really look closely, but it's going to be harder. Body language is certainly visible, but routines are a very visible aspect of what we're doing out there, and it can have quite an impact. It can impact ourselves, right, in terms of how we're feeling and our readiness going into the next point. Are we still thinking about the last point? Are we still thinking about the score in the past? Or are we ready to go and fully engaged and ready for the next point? So it can impact us, can impact our opponent. If our opponent sees us using a routine, having a system between points, that's going to make a big impact compared to the player who is just maybe still complaining about the last point or showing with their body language their negativity. So it can impact the opponent, it can impact, you know, people that are watching. So I think the routine can have quite an impact, but I do see, you know, I see it with myself. I see it with myself. I see it with people that I work with. I see it with players in general, that I think it's a challenge for players to really use the routine as effectively and as consistently as they'd like. So we'll dive into that a little bit more today.
Yeah. I think for me, Josh, more so than going through the steps of routines, like what they look like, I think it's more about, all right, why? What are some of the things that are getting in perhaps your way of doing this and really learning to commit to the routine as a regular part of your game, as a skill? You know, as you noted, and maybe to quote Dr. Jim Lehrer from the famous 16-second cure, a player's mental toughness is revealed between points. And so people like you and me, when we watch tennis, we're paying a lot of attention to the time between points to see what different players do. And it's a window into what they're thinking, what they're feeling. Even if we can't read their minds, we can see, you know, just through the speed of what they're doing, through their energy that they have, obviously through the body language, whether the routine looks structured, et cetera, we have an idea of what is going on with this player. And I think when we think about benefits of having a routine for you, the player, it's to help you really feel more in control of a situation that is just inherently not in your control. There's a lot going on out there, but can you really focus in on some things that can calm you down and help you feel like some degree of normalcy point to point to point? You know, as we've said many times, you've said this, Josh, a lot, you know, tennis is a sport of instant feedback. Somebody wins the point, somebody loses the point. There's a lot of, there can be judgment there. And how do you deal with that? So routines are, I think, an important part of that, whether we're talking about between points, whether we're talking about the changeover as well. These are opportunities to take control of the situation as much as you can, and then start working on how you feel so that when the next point arrives, you're completely ready for it, you know, physically, mentally, emotionally, tactically. You know exactly what you want to do, and you feel good going into it. And so routines in tennis are, you know, are obviously very important, but you see routines in many other sports. And so we want to make sure that when we have routines, we're also practicing them. So I think this is an important topic. We have done an episode on the between point routine some time ago, and you know, we'll probably touch on some of that today, but it would be good for people to revisit that as well to understand the, you know, the different things one can do between points.
Yeah, and I think that just looking back, I think there's a couple different episodes. I think episode 3 we discussed it to some extent. I think episode 37 we talked about how to play one point at a time, which also has to do with this. So I think, yeah, rather than us necessarily saying, okay, step one, this, step two, this, you know, I think people can look back at those episodes. They can also, you know, Brian, you brought up Dr. Jim Lear. He developed, I think, right around 30 years ago, something.
Yeah, it was like late 80s, yeah.
Maybe closer to 35. He developed the 16-second cure based on you know, doing a lot of work with players at Bollettieri Tennis Academy, which later turned into IMG. A lot of the top professional players, top junior players, and really just noticing that people weren't really maximizing their time between points well, and developed this system that, you know, people can certainly look up on their own, the 16-second cure with 4 steps, where essentially the purpose is, whatever has happened in that last point, we need to recognize what happened first and then put it behind us so that we can really try to reset and do that in a deliberate way, and then really have that clear intention, that clear game plan going into that next point so that we can really get started with that next point. And I think, to me, if we can get to that later stage, if we can get to that intention stage, that it's so much easier to go into that next point without necessarily thinking about what's already happened, right? If we can get to the point where we're thinking about the next point, having a clear game plan, all right, this is where I want to serve, I want to set up my forehand or whatever it may be, then generally I'm not going to be thinking about the last point. I'm not going to be focused on the score. I'm going to be more present. I'm going to be more present, more engaged. I'm going to be more ready to go for that next point. So again, that's not going to be our focus today. People can absolutely look back at those types of things. Today, I think we're more so going to be talking about the why, you know, what, why is this important? And also some of the things that get in the way, because I think, you know, athletes of all levels, tennis players of all levels, including at the highest levels, right, including at the WTA and ATP levels, don't necessarily use it as consistently, right? I think probably, you know, many high-level players have heard of it, have maybe learned it, have maybe worked on it. But I think there still often tends to be different barriers that get in the way of really consistently using it in the way that people want to. So Brian, I wanted to see maybe some of your thoughts in terms of some of the barriers, some of the main things that you find get in people's way in terms of consistently using the routine the way that they would like.
Yeah, I think one that we were talking about earlier is perhaps having some improper expectations about the routine or even any mental skill is, oh, I tried that and it didn't work. You know, you've heard that, I've heard that, and as if, you know, this is some sort of magic elixir that is going to somehow cure everything because I tried it once. And so we have to see routines as something that it's the right thing to do, whether you won the point or not. It's very similar to, you know, I would say it's almost like brushing your teeth, flossing your teeth. You don't necessarily go into that with an expectation of an outcome, but you do it overall because it will contribute to good health. And I would say that something like a between point routine can be, you know, seen as a means of contributing to good health, good mental health during a point. So I think that there's sometimes that's a barrier. I think, yeah, maybe there's just a belief issue. Is this something that's really going to work for me? Of course, you'll never know until you actually try and practice it. And I think one that is maybe common, especially amongst younger players, is no one else is doing this. Why should I?
Yep.
You know, so there's some peer pressure, you know, and especially when we're younger, there's certainly pressure to fit in, to conform with what a lot of other people are doing. But I think, as we know, Josh, you know, if you want to be excellent at anything, you have to be willing to do some things that other people are not. And, you know, maybe there's an embarrassment factor around it. Hey, I'm doing this, or my body language, I'm really projecting this. And if we can get through that, then you can obviously take your game to a whole nother level. But if you want to just fit in and conform with, let's be honest, a group of mediocre players, then that's fine. But if you want to, you know, get above that, then you have to deal with, I think, these barriers. And I think the last thing I'd say with why people struggle to commit to this is they don't practice the routines in practice. They'll try it in a match, which is a much higher pressure environment to give it a go. And of course, at first, it's going to feel awkward. So you may not have the best experience with it. And so, if we can really commit to practicing the routines in practice versus, I mean, you've seen lots of practices. I have seen lots of practices. Like if you go to a club, whether it's an academy or an adult league team, what's the emphasis? Hitting lots of balls. So, taking time between points, taking time between, you know, moments in a drill is definitely not, for most places, emphasized. So you get caught up in quantity of balls rather than quality. And I think the more that coaches can see this as an important skill, because I think it will also go to what we said in our previous episode on what to do when things are not working. This is the opportunity to work on that physiology and feel better.
Definitely, definitely. I think it's one of the best ways to do that. I think when we think about what's controllable, one of the main things that are controllable is what we do between points, right? I had a talk at one point, a presentation where I think it was the other, I forget the exact number, somewhere around 83%, the other 83% of a tennis match. With the idea that I think, and there's been different research about this, but it's somewhere I think around maybe 17 to 20% of a tennis match is actually the time where people are engaged in playing a point, which is kind of a shocking number, because you know where does the rest of that time go? Well, there's changeovers and there's time between sets, but there's quite a bit of time between points. And according to the rules, it's 20 seconds. Generally, I think there's a difference between ATP, WTA, and the Grand Slams at the pro level. But for all intents and purposes, I think generally 20 seconds. But you see quite a variance in terms of what people are doing with that time. First of all, some people play faster and slower. And you see the pros, sometimes they will intentionally play faster. or intentionally, and maybe not always intentionally, but play slower. And I think Djokovic actually is a great example of this, where when things are going really well, when he's cruising, when everything's going smoothly for him, he plays so quickly. He's up a set or two sets and a break, and he will just, has the ball already in his pocket. He's ready to go. He's already, at the baseline, ready to serve. Where when things are not going so well for him, he seems to really slow things down. But I think that, I think that the routine in general can just be that really helpful tool to help you be in control of yourself. You might not be able to be in control of the match. You certainly can't control your opponent. But you can be in control of yourself, which helps you to exert some degree of control on the match and on the potential outcome. So I think it's, when we think about what aspects of a match we actually can do something about, I think that in between time is really critical, and is also really an under focused on time. As we talked about, whether it's junior players, whether it's other sorts of players, a lot of times people look at their peers and they're not using a routine. And then so the players start saying, well, why do I have to do this? And I think it's, if we just want to play like everybody else, if we want to have outbursts and yell at ourselves and that sort of thing like everybody else, then we should probably do what everyone else is doing. But if we want to be great, if we want to be excellent, if we want to try to master some of these different aspects of the sport and not just control the controllables, but really master the controllables and think about that, the routine, the time in between points as one of the key controllable factors, that that we really want to try to be mastering that time, and we have to practice it. We can't just expect that when we're in the biggest moments that we're going to be able to really access that routine and really use it as effectively as possible and remember the different steps. Instead, we want to be able to really make it automatic over time. We can spend time at home visualizing it. We can spend time on the practice court using it. We can spend time when we're up 6-0, 4-0 using it, or when we're down by that same score, so that when, by the time we're in a big match, when it is a third set or it's a tiebreaker or whatever it is, and we maybe needed even a little bit more, that it's ours. It's become automatic. It's become a part of our system at that point, rather than just hoping to rely on it when we need it most.
And I think the more we give emphasis to it in training, the better. So I went to the Association for Applied Sports Psychology's annual conference last October, 2023, and it was in Orlando. And so they had a session out at the USGA National Campus with Dr. Larry Lauer and some of the other coaches and professionals that work there. And they talked about what their program is, and a heavy part of the program is the between point time. And so when they're training their players, and they did a on-court presentation for everybody, which I think was valuable, and they had two sports psych professionals, one on each side of the court, working with the players, and they weren't doing any tennis coaching. They were simply there to help them with the between point time. If they did a really good job, they emphasized that. If they felt like, hey, that might have been a yellow light routine, meaning yellow sort of in the traffic light kind of thing, yellow, slow down. Maybe that's an opportunity to slow down. So they were coaching with lots of emphasis on what players were doing between points, because doing this on your own can be hard. I think it's good to get some feedback on that. And if you look at the 16-second cure, the way Jim Lehrer presents it, it's almost as if, hey, this is a prescribed routine. You should follow it to the T, right? And do this and this and this. Here's the time frame, and it should be around 16, maybe 20 seconds, depending. And I think the thinking on that has evolved. I think the sort of the stages of the routine are similar today. It's still a great foundation for studying what to do in between points. But now, you know, USTA player development, the way they're training it is giving the players much more autonomy about how much time and what they're doing there. So because everybody is a little bit different. You pointed out Djokovic, who will play at different paces. But there are players also who don't do that. There are players who will play at the same pace regardless of the score and what's going on. You know, I think Nadal is closer to that. He's much closer to taking that 25-second shot clock down to 3 or 2 seconds. I think on the women's side, the one I've always been impressed with in terms of her discipline to do the routine every single point is Victoria Azarenka. You know, at least she's still playing. Maria Sharapova also did it a lot when she was playing as well. So I think this is a lot about you figuring it out. But if you're going to commit to the training of a routine, the way I normally do it, Josh, is I ask players to try to do it at first on every single point. Get used to that part. See what you think of that. Don't worry about how this taking of time may affect your opponent because you have no idea. To sort of project, oh, well, I should play fast because, you know, if I give my opponent time, he or she will start to figure things out. It's like, you don't know that. They may actually overthink stuff and make more mistakes. It could go either way. You don't know it, right? So the idea is do this for yourself first. Try to follow it strictly. Once you overcome that awkwardness, then you can play around having some autonomy with how much time you want to take. Yeah, if you want to play a little bit faster because you feel like you're in a good spot and you want to just want to kind of keep up the momentum, that's great. If that's who what you like and who you are. Federer used to do the same. But if you actually like having structure between every single point and doing the same thing, that's great too. You know, I tend to fall as a player more on that side. I tend to be the guy who takes much more time between points and wants to be slow and deliberate. And that's the way I train it. That's the way I play all my practice matches is doing it that way. So I think the more that people can emphasize the routine and commit to it as a training, a piece of their training, you know, as a hugely necessary skill to try to develop focus and intention and maintain some positivity throughout the match, it will naturally start to feel better like any skill. You won't run into that, well, I tried it once and it didn't work. That's like saying you tried the continental grip once to hit a serve and it didn't work. It's not going to work, right, on the continental grip. No one gets it right on the first try, but most players stick with it, knowing that it's not going to work on the first try. It's very similar with routines. You have to kind of figure out that cadence for yourself and start to feel, all right, am I starting to develop a sense of control, a sense of focus? Do I feel like I know what I'm doing? You know, am I able to reduce some of the maybe the pressure and the anxiety that I'm feeling? And that obviously takes a lot of practice.
Definitely, definitely. And I think, again, there's the maybe overused expression that practice makes perfect, but it really is perfect practice or deliberate practice that, makes, yeah. that actually makes perfect. And, you know, and can you, yeah, can you really commit to using it, right? Just like you're talking about, Brian, that you use, you know, whether it's a practice match, whether it's a USTA match, whether it's, you know, whatever it is, that's your system. You're trying to slow things down. You're trying to be intentional, deliberate between points. And I totally agree that I, you know, tell people the exact same to try to use it every point, try to use it every single point. Doesn't matter. I mean, I get that in a, especially for a junior player, maybe the practice setting might not always be designed to be able to do that, right? If you're playing a point game or you're doing king, queen of the court, whatever it may be, that's not really designed to be necessarily using your routine every single time. But if you're playing a practice set, if you're playing a tiebreaker, something like that, you know, certainly opportunities to use it there. But I think, yeah, using it every point is really, really key, especially at the start, to really build that foundation, to really make it as, you know, make it a part of your system. One thing I will often do, is, especially when somebody's just learning it, just developing it for the first time, is we'll start to go through some of the different steps, and then I'll have them visualize it. I'll maybe if the first time I'll walk them through it. Okay, you're walking to the fence, you're walking in this way, and that sort of thing. And I'll try to have them do it on their own. And that visualization process, I think, can also help to imprint it. So I think there's, you know, there's plenty of opportunities to practice it, right? Whether it's on the court, and certainly plenty of opportunities there, but also off the court, also at home, right? I mean, we've talked about visualization in the past and about how, you know, some of the benefits of it, some of the, you know, it's certainly, there's certainly a lot of research around visualization and its benefits. But I think especially when developing a new skill or tool, and that's exactly what this is, visualization can absolutely be helpful, just so that you feel that it's maybe, so that it maybe doesn't feel as new of a skill. Feels like you've done it many times before because you've practiced it many times before, because you've rehearsed it many times before. So that when it is a big point, when it is a tiebreaker, when it is a big no ad deuce point, whatever the situation is, it's not your first time using it. It's not your 10th time using it. You've used it countless times up to that point.
Yeah, and I think maybe another way to think about this, Josh, is, well, let's look at another sport like basketball. You know, players have a free throw routine, certain number of bounces, maybe what they do with their eyes, etc. And tennis players will typically do that with their serve. They'll have some sort of serve ritual. And it's very specific. And the thing is, they don't generally change it point to point. They don't bounce it, you know, 20 times once and one time the next time and then some other random number. It's often very similar and structured, and it's ritualized. And I think all we're really asking is, can you bring a similar mindset to that entire time between points to routinize it or routinize it? Same with the changeover part. Instead of just doing things sort of on the fly and in the moment, the more thoughtful we are about that, the more it feels normal. So, you know, why do we do this on the serve? Well, it's to get ourselves to feel comfortable. It's to get ourselves ready to serve well. And we believe that whatever we're doing as part of that serve ritual enables better serving. And so I think if we expand that and we look at the entire time between points, what we're asking is, if you structure this a little bit better, routinize it more, you're enabling yourself for better play, period. And then you repeat over and over again. You know, tennis is obviously, as we've mentioned many times, a very tricky sport with the winning and losing of points, and points don't matter all that much. You know, they're a means to an end, and then games, same thing, they're kind of a means to an end. And you can get really kind of tricked into thinking certain moments in a match are more important than they might really be. And the routine can really help you through that, help you understand that a little bit better. So the more commitment to this, and I think, you know, that's a big part of what we're asking here is, can you commit to your routines in practice? Can you commit to them in your match play, knowing this is a super important skill? And then understand your own personal barriers to why that could be hard, and then deal with those. Because there are probably some beliefs or expectations around those that can be dealt with to help you get through it and then commit more to this kind of work.
Definitely. I think that really is an important question that everyone can think of, right? Especially if they're not using the routine as consistently as they'd like. And, you know, as you said, Brian, the routine can be, you know, you can make it your own, right? Where it doesn't have to look exactly like the 16-second cure from, you know, from when Dr. Jim Lehrer developed it, right? It can certainly, you know, you can make it your own. You can add in certain aspects that work for you, right? Maybe there's certain self-talk or a certain phrase that you like to say to yourself between points. Maybe there's something else that you like to do between points. You know, you should certainly add that in. You should make it your own. Maybe there's an aspect of it that maybe, you know, doesn't gel with you as much. Trying to get to a point where it's yours, where you can take ownership of it, but it's not just like, okay, well, this is something that Brian or Josh is telling me to do, or instead, you know, no, this is something really that I'm using because I want to use it and I see the benefit of it. But I think, yeah, just like you're saying, you know, can we, you know, for whoever's listening, be able to really think about what are those barriers. Is it that, you know, in a maybe a practice setting, I don't feel comfortable slowing things down and using it because other people aren't using it? Is that it, you know, I'm not sure if it's going to work? Is it that I just haven't spent enough time using it where I can see that it's working, right? Or I haven't demonstrated to myself that it can be successful, right? Can we start there and really think about, okay, what's getting in the way of that? Because, you know, and also just try to, I think, pay more attention to some of the best players in the world, right? And they may not, you know, you if you're watching on TV, you know, oftentimes the camera will sort of switch between a player and then maybe their opponent and maybe a fan in the stands or their coach or whatever it is. So you may not necessarily get the chance to watch a player during that entire in-between point time. But especially if you watch live, if you watch a pro match live, if you watch different, you know, more elite matches live, you'll see it more often than not. You'll often see people having a system, having a process, and as you know, and it's not just about that time right before they serve. Oftentimes when I ask people about routines and even broach the topic in the first place, people will say, oh yeah, you know, I like to bounce the ball before I serve. Or sometimes people will say, oh, I like to go to my towel. So, you know, I often hear some of the critical pieces of it, but I think just having, as you said, having a way to really take that entire time between points and, you know, and make it routine, make it automatic, have a system where, you know, where you're not leaving things up to chance. Because I think what happens when we leave things up to chance is that's when things can really go in all different types of directions. And if I double faulted in the last point, or I missed an easy volley or overhead, which will happen sometimes to everybody, if we don't have a plan, if we don't have a system, it's very easy for things to go haywire in that moment, right? Easy to start yelling at ourselves, easy to maybe drop the racket or throw the racket or something like that. Easy for ourselves to get in our own way with our behavior, with our actions, which not only impacts us, it impacts our opponent, right? And when we see, and I like to ask people this question, right? When we're talking about routines, but emotions, behaviors on the court, you know, I like to ask people the question, you know, when you see your opponent acting that way or doing that, how does it make you feel? You know, what's the impact of that? And generally people will say, oh, I feel more confident. I feel good that, you know, what I'm doing is working. And it's like, all right, well, you know, when you act that way, obviously it has that same impact on your opponent. So I think, yeah, having that system really makes it so much less likely that things just completely go haywire and just completely fall apart in those sorts of moments, because we've accounted for that time. We've accounted for that time. We've given ourselves the chance to reckon with the last point and trying to do that a little bit more objectively, trying to more so just notice what happened rather than judge it. We've given ourselves time to sort of reset. We've given ourselves time to, you know, to really have a clear plan going into that next point. So I think, you know, if we are going through the routine, it's not a guarantee that we're going to be controlling our emotions every single time, every single match, but it certainly gives us a better chance because we're planning for that time, and we're planning for different situations that come up, including difficult, challenging situations like missing an easy shot or being behind in a match or not playing your best. So I think it can be, you know, really helpful for all those sorts of situations.
And I think, you know, maybe as we wrap this up, Josh, you were mentioning making this part of your system, which I think is really a good way to think about it. If anybody's had a chance to listen to our discussion with Ryan Harrison, talked a lot about, you know, creating a very authentic way of playing and really perfecting that, working on that. And I would say that this is one of the components of your system, as the way you phrase it, right? And so you want to work that in. You want to treat this time between points as part of the performance, as part of your system of playing. And ask yourself the questions about what might be getting in my way. What is preventing me from actually committing to this? Because I'm sure all of those concerns can be mitigated, whether it's telling your coach that, hey, I'm working on this, can we have space for it? Telling your practice partner when you play a practice match, hey, I'm working on this, so just know that I'm going to take a little extra time today between points. Just being maybe open about working on it. There are a lot of other things that could go into that. So if you have particular challenges that you're facing with committing to your routines and you want our advice, please send us an email, tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be happy to help you out with that. So that's our show for today. Thank you all for listening. For more on today's episode, please check out the show notes. If you have any feedback or questions for the two of us, please email us at tennisiqpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you're enjoying the content that Josh and I discuss on the show, please rate and review the podcast so other tennis enthusiasts can find it more easily. Additionally, to be notified of new episodes, please subscribe to the show on your podcast platform of choice, including YouTube. You can also check us out on Instagram. If you would like to support the podcast, please visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/tennisiqpodcast/membership, where you can learn about the benefits of being part of the Tennis IQ podcast community. Thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon in our next episode.